Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
And I can remember like it was yesterday, CY saying, you know, hey, man, you can't go to the AAU tournament, bring the AAU tournament to you. And his point was my role at that point, I couldn't recruit, but I could try to build the best team camp in the state of Florida. So what we tried to do was make sure we had the best players in the state of Florida and Georgia at Florida State's team camp every year. So now when I become the assistant coach at FGCU, those relationships are already established. So now our team camp at FGCU starts going because I've already got the relationships.
Rising Coaches events are back. This summer, we have two live in-person events, and we can't wait to see you there. The Rising Coaches Conference West will take place in Phoenix, Arizona, June 17th through the 18th. And the Rising Coaches Conference East will be held in Atlanta, Georgia, July 6th through the 7th. Both events are right before major recruiting tournaments in those cities. So come a day early, attend the conference, and get some recruiting done while you're there. All information can be found at risingcoaches.com. Events are $199, but if you sign up before May 22nd, you can receive a $25 off discount. And if you're a Rising Coaches member, you'll receive $100 off. If you're a member, head to the member site for the coupon code and receive your discount. We can't wait to see you guys there. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Rising Coaches Association, the biggest coaching tree in all of basketball. Sign up for the Rising Coaches Association now for just $120 a year and become part of our community, relationships, and development. We talk about it all the time. There's no straight lines in this profession. There's only ups and downs. You need a community that knows exactly what you're going through and has been there before to help lean on during the rough times of the industry. You need genuine relationships, not just exchanging numbers, not just meeting new people at the Final Four in the off season. You should be doing it all year round, and we provide tremendous opportunities to create those genuine relationships all through the year. And finally, development. We have so much content and so many resources so that you can work on your craft and become a better coach. Because we put such a premium and an emphasis on helping you establish new, genuine relationships, it takes all of the political BS side of the business out of the equation for you. All of that gets removed off of your plate. You can just worry about being you, making new friends in the business, and working on your craft and becoming the best coach that you can be and impacting the people that you're around on a daily basis. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com/membership on risingcoaches.com. Welcome back to another edition of the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm Adam Gordon, and today's episode is brought to you by Lucio Sports. Lucio Sports is the one-stop shop for all your technological and communication needs within your staff. Anything that you want to parlay to your staff or to your athletes, you can do it through Lucio's apps. And I don't know if you guys have just seen this, but the NCAA just voted to pass a rule that allows technology in huddles. They've been doing it in the NBA for years. Now it's coming to college basketball, which is exciting. And Lucio has been working with the pros on this for the last three, four seasons. Their whiteboard app allows you to show play animations on your iPad. So the days of drawing crazy squiggly lines that no one knows what they mean anymore, those are over. Now you're going to pull out an iPad and hit play and show the play diagram animated. You can get through four or five of those animations within a 30-second timeout. And the numbers that they've collected over the last three, four seasons of efficiency and effectiveness of ATOs for teams that use their product are off the charts. So go to luciosports.com for more information on that. Or if you sign up for a Rising Coaches membership, you get a free personal license to their product so that you can get hands-on and try it out and see if it's a good fit for your program. So thanks as always to Lucio Sports. Very excited for today's episode. Our good friend, our Rising Coaches OG, Michael Fly, head coach at Florida Gulf Coast. Mike, what's up, man? How are you?
I just wanted to know if I used the product that you were just talking about, if they also guaranteed a score on all those ATOs coming out of timeouts.
I don't think they make that guarantee. However, I'm sure they would love to collect some data from you on it. You got to have dudes that put the ball in the hole at the end of the day, right?
That's right. That's right.
Fly, what's up, man? Good to see you as always. What's going on in your world? Beautiful day in Florida, I imagine.
Always, you know, the weather's tough down here, as you know. This is a little bit of a slow time for us. Our guys are home right now for the most part, and hopefully getting a little rest and relaxation. And they've probably, you know, heard my voice just a little bit, you know, over the last year. So I think it's good for them to get away for a little bit, and we'll get them back in late June and get ready to rock and roll. So just doing some watching a film and a little bit of recruiting and getting my batteries recharged a little bit too.
Okay, great. And I want to get into Florida Gulf Coast in a little bit. I want to get into your career path a little bit. And I want to talk about like coaching changes and how to handle some of that stuff. I want to get to all of that, but let's start with this. It was 2010, man, crazy that it was 11 years ago that we pulled the trigger and we were like, okay, let's put a little conference on. We'll call it Rising Coaches. We knew each other a little bit. I think you were really close with Andy Farrell by that point. And so literally Rising Coaches came out of the film room at Clemson and, you know, I'd tell Andy one day, okay, this person's in, that person's in. And one of the first people that Andy said is, all right, Fly's in, the video guy at Florida State, he's going to come. And it was like, yes. And it was just kind of born from that. And then, you know, like a month later, we were all sitting in a meeting room in Vegas on the strip, just kind of talking it all out, listening to some great coaches that came and spoke. But the real thing was like the relationships that we were able to build starting with that year. And it's carried us through, you know, over a decade now.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I mean, looking back on that, I can still remember being at Final Fours with you guys and just talking about, man, I wish there was some way for us to all get together that are all in the same kind of boat. And, you know, everybody's trying to figure this thing out. And it's an intimidating thing, I think, especially when you're young, just trying to wrap your head around, how do I get into this business even? What do I do? It's funny looking back. I can't believe it's been that long ago, but to watch kind of everybody's career paths and to keep up with them. I was actually just on the phone with Trey Meyer a few minutes ago before you got on, who was another guy that really jumped in on the ground floor, obviously. So just those relationships, I think, endure. And, you know, I think it's funny. I was talking to a young guy the other day, and it used to be hard to know what to tell guys in terms of getting into the business because there is no blueprint. You know, and how do you help them? And now it's great because the first thing I tell guys before anything else, I'm like, hey, man, are you a member with Rising Coaches? And most guys know what that is. The few that don't, I'm like, well, that's your first step. That's the first thing you need to do to start connecting with people. Because when we were at that point, we didn't have a resource like that.
Yeah, no question. Well, I appreciate that. And yeah, and just thinking back to that first year, I think there was like 32 of us that came. And just like looking around the room, like it's crazy to see where everyone's gone their career. And I'm hoping you can give me confirmation on this because I've gone back and like looked at the list and, you know, I've tried to track where everyone's gone and we'll use it occasionally for marketing material. And one of the dudes that like I have in my mind but does not show up on any registration is Andy Birdsong, who was a GA with you guys, right?
He was.
Was he not there?
Whew, you're asking me to rack my brain here. I don't know if Andy was at the first one. I believe he came to at least one, I think. But yeah, the years start running together. I'm not sure if he was at the first one or not. But, you know, I think Andy is a great story. I talk about Andy a lot to our players, to our managers, just in terms of you just never know the people around you where guys are going to land. And I think Andy's a perfect example of, you know, he was a GA for us at Florida State. And when I was the video guy, he was a GA, you know, he was just a couple of years younger than me. And we had a really close relationship at that time and are still close to today. But, you know, he goes from a GA who I used to joke, he would bring coffee in the morning sometimes to me. I'd be like, Andy, come on, man, I'm your age. You don't need to do that. You know, and he's now helping, you know, sign Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving a couple of years ago and assistant GM with the Brooklyn Nets. And so, you know, that's why I think the connections and the relationships are so important, because in this business, you know, I was just talking to somebody about this, but, you know, we are dependent in terms of the decisions 18 to 22 year olds make on a day-to-day basis, whether or not a ball goes in the basket or not. You know, there's so many things that are out of our control. The relationships you maintain are in your control. And I think it's really important that we all have those, because I've told a bunch of people this even the last few weeks, you know, there's going to be a time that, you know, guys that maybe are calling me right now for help, I'm going to be calling them at some point going, hey, you know, I need your help on something. So that's why the business is closed. That's why it's tight knit. And I think that's why the people you work with are always going to be your best network. The people that are with you day in and day out and making sure you maintain those relationships.
Yeah, 100%. That's spot on. And yeah, just it's cool because you're the first one of that group. And again, about 30 people that first year, everyone's gone on to have great success in their own ways. You're the first one to get like the Division I head coaching job. We've had a couple of other head coaches, but not at that level. Did you think, I mean, of course, everyone's got confidence. And when you're that age, you feel like I'm definitely going to make it. But like, did you think you'd be like, did you think it would happen so fast for you? Because how old were you when you got the head job?
It's a great question. Let's see. I believe I was 34.
Okay.
34. That's pretty 35.
Young. That's below the average, probably age-wise.
For sure.
For first-time head coaches.
Yeah, so I say this all the time. I mean, one, I've been really fortunate to work for that. That's number one. I mean, I tell people this all the time. It's who you work for. And even, you know, starting my first job, I worked for Happy Osborne, who won a national championship in NAI at that level, is one of the best coaches in the country. I went from him to Coach Bickerstaff in the NBA, Coach Bernie Bickerstaff. He'd been in the league for 40 plus years. And just on that staff, I'm walking in every day with guys. I mean, JB Bickerstaff is a great example. I'm going into work with him every day. And JB's now the head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, I go from there to Coach Hamilton's staff at Florida State, and obviously the job that they've done to sustain success in the ACC for 20 years, I mean, is insane in this business, and especially at a school that before he became the head coach was not a basketball school. So learning from Coach Ham and Coach Jones, and you even look at the staff that we had there at Florida State, I mean, just on that staff, I mean, you know, Coach Jones is one of the best in the business in terms of associate head coach. And you look at Coach Enfield and the success he's had at USC, and Coach Corey Williams, who's been a head coach and is now with Texas Tech. But just from that group, you know, kind of the branches of the coaching tree that go out, came to Florida Gulf Coast and obviously worked for Coach Enfield when he was a head coach, and then worked for a really, really good coach in Joe Dooley after that. And so, you know, I've just been fortunate, to be honest with you, Adam, that the people that I've worked for were such good coaches. You know, you steal something from this guy, steal something from that guy. And we won so much. And that's what I was talking to somebody about this the other day. You know, you can network all you want and do all those things. But at the end of the day, do you win and do you contribute to winning? And that's why I was fortunate, you know, here specifically at Florida Gulf Coast, Andy Enfield and Joe Dooley won, and they won big. And that's what helped me get the opportunity that I got.
So do you think it was just blind luck that you ended up with all these Hall of Fame coaches? Or was that intentional and part of your plan?
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously it wasn't there was a time I can remember I was sitting in Kentucky after finishing my internship in the NBA and trying to figure out what I was going to do. I mean, I was sitting in my small town and had applied to, and for all you guys going through this, I applied to 400 basketball jobs on, you know, stuff posting on Hoop Dirt and NCAA Marketplace and all this stuff. I got one interview. And at that point, I had a year experience in the NBA and also at a pretty high NAI program. I'd been really involved with Five Star, which was still really important at that time. And I couldn't get anything. I got one interview, didn't get that. And was just really fortunate that a guy I worked for in the NBA, Drew Perry, who's still actually with the Charlotte Hornets, was connected with somebody at Florida State, and they wanted a guy that had been in the NBA and had done video and was younger and was willing to work crazy hours. And so that really, you know, the phone call that came about Florida State was based on a relationship. And so it was just one relationship led to the next relationship, to the next relationship. So no, I definitely didn't plan any of this out. I do think, again, you got to work really hard, and that's part of it. but you got to catch breaks. I mean, that's a big part of this business. I mean, I think Coach Enfield would be the first one to tell you when we left Tallahassee, if you'd have told both of us that we were going to be in the Sweet 16 two years later at a place called Florida Gulf Coast, and we'd both be lying. So, you know, you got to do a great job, but you also have to catch a lot of breaks. And I've been really fortunate to catch breaks.
And it started too, like you said, with Happy Osborne. And so many guys, I mean, Georgetown College, right?
NAIA. Yes. Yep.
You know, so many people that I talk to that are looking to break into the business, you know, maybe they're already in it. Maybe they've done a GA spot. Maybe they just finished playing or a manager spot. They're so picky about where they take their GAs or their entry level deals. And so many of them, and I was this way too, like so many of them are too good for junior college or for NAIA, and they just want Division One. But you got to go work for somebody who's Happy Osborne, as good of a coach as anybody in the country, as well respected as anybody in the country. He just happens to coach at Georgetown College, and no, they're not on national TV, but in the coaching circles, an endorsement from him goes way farther than, you know, being the 13th guy on the totem pole at some other, you know, Division I school.
Well, I think that was what was super valuable for me when I was young and wasn't married and didn't have kids. And I think at that point, I tell guys all the time, you know, when you graduate college, you've got about an 8 to 10 year window to, you know, take your shot. That's the time to go try things. That's the time to pick up and move. That's the time to, I took out loans. I mean, I was broke, you know, but you had to be a little crazier than other people that, to your point, wanted to be at certain levels and maybe travel in a certain way and all that kind of stuff. So, I lost my lights here, Gordo.
Give me a second. Okay. You're good.
I got motion censored in here. that was a really important thing for me. And I tell guys that, I mean, I went to University of Kentucky and I had no chance to get involved with their program. It's just too competitive. But going to Georgetown allowed me to do almost everything. I mean, coach let me do, you know, there's less restrictions at that level. I had my hand in a lot of the stuff in the program, and I was allowed to immerse myself in things that otherwise I just wouldn't know how to do. And if I'd been a manager at Kentucky, as good as the program was, I wouldn't have known any of that stuff. So getting to learn from him, and then even going on to the Bobcats at the time, the Hornets now, you know, that situation as well. I mean, I was interning and actually taking a class to be able to do the internship legally, because you can't work for free. You got to be able to get class credit. So I was paying for a class. I tell people this, I was living in someone's garage legitimately, which was an interesting experience, about 20 miles outside of Charlotte. But it also kind of gave me a little bit of a chip on my shoulder, I guess you'd say, and a little bit of a hunger that, hey, you know, I'm going to go get the best experience I can get and not worry about the money and not worry about the location and not worry about, I mean, I was friendless. Some people might tell you I'm still friendless, but I was friendless for a few years because I kept moving everywhere. And it was just all about getting the experience, getting the work. I think I moved 4 times in 5 years at one point. But it was just because there were opportunities to go learn from really good coaches. So I think it's really important, man, for guys 22 to 30, 28, you know, somewhere in that range. It can't be about the level. It can't be about the are you on TV or not. Go learn from good coaches. And when they say there's an opportunity, move anywhere. Move anywhere in the country. Do whatever you got to do, because it will pay off in the long run, you know, if you're fortunate. Again, you still got to catch breaks. But I don't think you can be picky, you know, especially when you don't have experience. You got to go where the job is.
Yeah, no question. And if you're going to chase anything, don't chase levels. Don't chase money. Chase winning, right?
That's right. Winning and experience from guys that have done it at a really high level and been successful consistently.
I love it. Okay, that's a perfect segue to this. Like you mentioned, you got an 8 year window or so to move around and take those risks. But, you know, you got your first assistant job at Florida Gulf Coast, followed Andy Enfield there from Florida State staff, and you stayed and you're still there. but, you know, prior to you getting the head coaching job, I mean, there was a coaching change, 2 different head coaches. Were you there 8 years as an assistant?
I was 7 years as the assistant and then got the head job.
Yeah. And I know there were opportunities to move on and take, you know, maybe higher paying jobs or jobs in bigger leagues. What made you decide, hey, this is one that I'm going to stay here for?
Yeah. So the first go round, you know, we had gotten here from Florida State. We were here 2 years. Coach Enfield did a tremendous job of building a program quickly. There were some good players that were here, and then he did a great job of adding good talent and did an unbelievable job coaching that group. When he took the USC job, I was that close to going to California. He was really good about giving me an opportunity to go with him, making sure that I had an opportunity to go if it was best for me. I'd only been on the floor for 2 years at that point. I'd only been a coach for 2 years. So, you know, to be able to make a jump from the A-Sun to the Pac-12 when he's on his first, you know, he'd only been a head coach for 3 years. So, you know, he made sure I was going to have a job on his staff, but there was a chance that, you know, I wasn't going to be able to be on the floor at that point. I was going to have to go back to some support staff roles and those type of things. So he was phenomenal through that process of saying, hey, you've got a opportunity with me, you know, until you tell me that you're not coming. But let's see if there's a way for you to stay on the court somewhere, because I think, you know, you're going to be good. You're only 2 years in. So between him, my AD here at Florida Gulf Coast, Ken Cavanaugh, who was really, really loyal to me through the process and great to me. And I think, too, Joe Dooley's got to get a ton of credit here as well to come into a new job and keep someone on your staff that Coach Dooley didn't know me at all, none, who had been here with the previous head coach for Coach Enfield to allow me to still have an opportunity if I needed to go to USC, for my current AD to allow me the opportunity to stay throughout the transition, and then for Coach Dooley to allow me to be part of his staff, you know, when it was his opportunity to have success as a head coach too. That doesn't normally happen. And I was really, really lucky. And as good of a job, Coach Enfield obviously got us on the map. Coach Dooley sustained that success, which is really hard to do. You know, when you reach a height that we reach with Coach Enfield, to sustain that success through all that pressure, it's really hard. So I was so fortunate to stay with Coach Dooley, and we grew our relationship to the point that I was the third assistant when I started with Coach Enfield. And by the end with Coach Dooley, I was the top assistant. And so just learning the business, learning how to recruit, learning how to scout, learning how to do ins and outs. Coach Dooley let me do all kinds of things to prepare me in terms of speaking to booster groups and giving me, you know, scouting opportunities, allowing me to recruit. So it really prepared me. So when I did get opportunities to leave, you know, I had to really weigh, is the situation that I'm looking at, is it a winning situation? Am I going to be valued like I am at FGCU? Do I trust the people I'm going to? And then at the end of the day, just what's the best opportunity for my career and for me to potentially become a head coach at some point? And so those were all things that played into the decisions. But again, without, you know, Coach Enfield and Coach Dooley and the unbelievable job they did here fostering my career, I wouldn't have even had opportunities to leave. And I also wouldn't have been smart enough, to be honest with you, to stay in a winning situation so I'd get this opportunity.
Okay, great stuff. You mentioned the recruiting piece. We talk a lot about, you know, especially guys coming through the support staff roles, that it's always hard to get over that hump of like, well, he doesn't have recruiting experience. And just, you know, you can get pigeonholed, you know, as an ops guy or a video guy, whatever. So I'm curious, because your reputation, you quickly gained a reputation as being a great recruiter and having a great way with your athletes. How did you transition that? Like, you're not, you know, again, you didn't play at a big time school. You didn't work for some big time AAU program or JUCO. You know, you are a self-made, you know, guy in a sense. How did you establish that recruiting rep?
Yeah. So that's funny. I was just talking to somebody about this. You know, you get certain reputations in the business depending on the role that you have. Right. So, for example, when I was coming out of Florida State, the reputation was, OK, well, he's been a video guy and scouted in the NBA. He's been a video guy at Florida State. And if anybody knows Coach Hamilton, Coach Jones and those guys, they're extremely prepared. That is a lot of hours in that film room. So that was kind of the rep was, oh, he's going to be a good X and O guy, but who knows if he can recruit, you know, he's never done it, you know, all that kind of stuff. Then when I became an assistant, I kind of put my mind to, okay, I know that's out there that nobody knows if I can recruit because I've never done it. So I started spending most of my time and effort on that. And it was not at that time, I wasn't signing guys in year one necessarily in year two, but it was learning how to recruit and going into gyms and recruiting younger guys, because the older guys on our staff were recruiting some of the guys that, you know, they'd done it at other places. So I was recruiting the younger classes, building those relationships. I was going into gyms that and calling AAU coaches at the time. We had no chance to get their players because we never won anything here. Nobody even heard of Florida Gulf Coast. So at that time, it was just the relationship piece, you know, and the years of going into people's gyms, running team camps, calling coaches. Now, when we start to have some success, now we can start to get involved with some of those players that a couple of years ago we couldn't. I'll use, and I know this is Florida State centric because obviously that's my tree, but I'll use a Charlton Young CY line for those of you that know him. There was a time when I was frustrated. It was probably actually going into Rising Coaches, to be honest with you, that, you know, I didn't know how I was going to make that jump and how am I going to prove to people that I can recruit and the whole deal. And I can remember like it was yesterday, CY saying, you know, hey, man, you can't go to the AAU tournament, bring the AAU tournament to you. And his point was, my role at that point, I couldn't recruit, but I could try to build the best team camp in the state of Florida. So what we tried to do was make sure we had the best players in the state of Florida and Georgia at Florida State's team camp every year. So now when I become the assistant coach at FGCU, those relationships are already established. So now our team camp at FGCU starts going because I've already got the relationships, and Coach Infield obviously as well. So that's one way, if you're in a support staff role, get all over team camp. I guarantee you, if you have the top 50 players in your state at your team camp, your head coach is going to notice that. So that was part of it. And then also it was just putting the time in. I think the concept of, oh, that guy's connected, that guy can get players, that, I mean, personally, I don't know how much reality is in that more so than just, are you willing to be consistent? Are you going to put the time in? Are you going to call the people? Are you going to text them? You know, connections help. But at the end of the day, it's like anything else. I think you have to put the work in.
Yeah, great stuff.
What's up, podcast fans? I want to share some information about one of our partners, Lucio Sports. The team at Lucio has built an integrated platform of coaching productivity and player development apps that are being used by some of the best basketball programs around the globe, helping everyone from NBA champions to youth development academies. Their innovative and competitive memorization games make it so much easier for new players and staff members to remotely get caught up to speed. With animated playbooks, drill libraries, player development planning and monitoring, engaging game plans and scouting reports, predictive play drawing, their content services team, and more, Lucio Sports has got you covered. From players to coaches to support staff and executives, use Lucio Sports to securely keep everyone in your organization on the same page with simple on-demand access to your team's entire knowledge base. For more information, check out luciosports.com. That's L-U-C-E-O sports.com.
So for you, recruiting comes down to like follow through and consistency.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like anything else. You know, you have to be genuine. You have to be who you are. I don't think you can pretend to be somebody that you're not. I think guys see through that pretty quickly. I do think it's consistency. You know, do they hear from you consistently? I think another thing, and everybody does it differently. My way is not necessarily the right way, but, you know, are you in too close a contact? Are you driving them crazy? Are you becoming the guy that when they see you on the phone, they're mad? Are you overselling to the point that you can't deliver when they get here in terms of telling them what it's going to be like? I also think, you know, there's some track record with guys that you have recruited in the past and the experience they had. You know, I think sometimes in our business, people get hung up on who they signed. Well, it's great you signed them. How did their career go? Did you foster that? Did they have success? Did they graduate from college? Did they get in trouble when they were on campus, or were they a great representative of the program? Did they become an all-league player? Did it just look good on signing day? So if you follow through, I don't think the recruiting process ends when you sign a guy. I think the recruiting process ends when they graduate from your institution and you've set them up either with a pro basketball job or tried to help them get a job outside of basketball. Now, you can't guarantee those things, but you've got to try to help those guys. That's when the recruiting process becomes finalized, when you've seen the thing all the way through. And I think when you do that, word gets out. I mean, why we started having success here was the first few classes that we signed, those guys had success, and we tried to treat them like family while they were here. So now the program starts to recruit itself a little bit. You know, they start to tell their buddies and their friends, hey, man, you know, you go there, you're going to have a great experience. They're going to treat you right. They're going to do things the right way. And we're not perfect, and I'm sure there's guys that haven't had good experiences, but I think all that goes into recruiting. And I do think it's time spent. I think it's not, you know, recruiting is not, I think sometimes young guys think it's I don't know if glamorous is the right word, but I mean, it's just time spent. Are you willing to pick the phone up? Are you willing to text them? You know, you got to be organized. Like I have a board where every day I've got, these are the guys we have to get. So these guys have to hear from me every day. Parents have to hear from me every day. Coaches have to hear from me every day. You know, and that's what it is, I think, in terms of recruiting, just the consistent message. And then again, just you got to be yourself, man. You can't get on the phone and act like somebody you're not, or they're going to see that quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think the other reputation that you've gained is like having it, like you said, having a great relationship with your guys once they're there. You know, a lot of people do the recruiting thing and then they get on campus and they're already on, you know, they don't pay attention to those guys anymore. They're on to the next, you know, class. But you always did a great job managing those relationships. I'm curious where that came from you, or, you know, like what inspired that, or was there somebody that showed you the ropes there, or is that just your personality? And then I'm curious, like, how you transitioned that to, once you became the head coach, obviously dynamics change, right? And so how did those relationships change?
Yeah, I think, again, based on, you know, where I came from in terms of what I saw Coach Osborne do with his players, I thought Coach Bickerstaff, you know, even at the highest level, he had a great way of those guys knew that he cared about them. He had an unbelievable way of, you know, being disciplined when he needed to be, but them knowing that he had their best interests. Coach Hamilton's probably the best I've seen at that. I mean, he's unbelievable at, you know, they know he means business, but he'll quickly put his arm around them. And they know at the end of the day that he loves and cares about them as human beings and wants them to be successful. And so, you know, watching that every day at my different stops before I came here, and then taking a little bit, you know, Coach Enfield had a little different relationship with guys than Coach Hamilton did, than Coach Bickerstaff did, than Coach Dooley did, you know, and you kind of look at what worked for those guys. And then also, again, you got to be you. You got to be who you are. I think anybody that knows me knows, you know, I'll talk a little bit, and I like to be around people. That's just kind of something that's always been me. There is definitely a big transition when you go from an assistant coach to a head coach, especially at the same place, because I think when you're the assistant coach, your role is much different. The players can't ever think that you're their friend, because you're not. But they also have to feel like you're always in their corner. You're always going to support them. You have to play good cop or bad cop at times, depending on what the head coach is doing at that particular time. But I think the key is always the players have to know that, yes, you have their back and you love them tremendously, and you're going to do anything you can to try to help them. That being said, whatever the head coach says goes. And that was always, you know, I would let guys with any coach that I worked for, that you can come in and talk and we can go through stuff. And even if you're frustrated, you can air your frustrations in the office. That's fine. I'll listen to you. And then, you know, we'll go to lunch or go spend time. But at the end of the day, hey, we're going to do what boss man says, right? I know. So I think it's, you got to support the player, but you also got to support the head coach. When you make that transition, especially, you know, in the same program, I think it's difficult sometimes for the coach and the players, because you're transitioning to a completely different role. I still, you know, want to spend time with our guys, have relationships with our guys, get to know them on a personal level. My time is more limited now than it was when I was an assistant. That's one challenge, I think, when you become the head coach. The other difference is, you know, players are going to say things to an assistant that they're not going to say to the guy that controls their playing time. So I think you have to manage that a little bit. They still have to know you love and care about them. They still have to know that you've got their best interest. But you just have to know, you know, they're not going to tell you as a head coach the same thing they're going to say to an assistant. So the relationship definitely does change. But what I've tried to do, and again, it is a challenge, is I try to spend time with guys and not always talk basketball. And they laugh at me. I'll make them come see me, or we'll go grab lunch or whatever. I'll say, okay, man, it's time for the wellness check-in. And they're like, yeah, we know. So, you know, we try to talk family, girlfriend, classes, if they've decided what they want to do with their future non-basketball wise. Now, we may get into the basketball thing a little bit, but it's more so just, hey, man, how you doing? How's life? And I think it's important that guys got to know you can – they got to trust that you can help them get better on the floor, and they also got to know that at the end of the day, you want what's best for them. You want them to be successful. That may not mean they're shooting it 20 times a night. It may not mean they're playing all 40 minutes, but they got to believe that you have their best interest at heart. And as a coach, that's what our job is to try to make sure guys are successful on and off the floor.
What's been the biggest challenge as a head coach?
Ooh, how long you got, buddy? I think time management is probably the hardest thing. I think everybody, when you're an assistant coach, I know for me, everybody thinks that, you know, I always say this to guys now, don't ever say when I'm a head coach, because that's the every assistant says that. And I said it all the time to myself, you know, not out the, but, oh, when I'm a head coach, I'm going to do this. When I'm a head coach. Well, you don't know until you've sat in that seat. I mean, I already had a great deal of respect for every head coach I worked for before. The day I moved into this seat, I have a whole different level of respect for all of them now, because you don't know when you're an assistant the daily pressures they have on them. You don't know what's going through their head in terms of who's pulling them in what direction. You know, as an assistant coach, you never want to lose a game. But, you know, when you lose, you go home, you recruit, you take care of the play. You know, you may not live with it the same as the head coach does. So there's just a whole different set of circumstances that come as a head coach. I think a big learning curve for me, I spent a lot of my time recruiting when I was an assistant, a lot. And I still spend a lot of time, probably compared to some head coaches, with recruiting. But there's no way to spend the kind of time on it that you did when you're an assistant. You just can't, and run the program effectively. So there's tons of differences. But again, I would tell you the biggest thing is just understanding you only have so many hours in a day, and you've got to touch a bunch of different groups, boosters, administration, players. Like, to your point, current players got to be more important than the guys that are coming in next, because those guys aren't in your program, but then making sure those guys know how important they are. So I think the time management factor is probably the biggest challenge when you make that adjustment and that jump.
Yeah. And also, like, I've talked about this too, like, just transitioning to, you know, from being an employee as an assistant coach to running a business, that pressure goes from being external, you know, your boss, the boosters, you know, the athletes, to internal, you know, like, it's on you. And like you said, you live with those losses a little bit different than everybody else. Like, that internal pressure is what keeps you up at night, right? That's what causes you to lose sleep. And so, like, how do you manage all that? What's been the biggest, and I'm sure it's an ongoing process and we're always trying to get better, but what have you found to help you with your time management and with that, you know, change in dynamic?
Yeah, I think it's understanding that, you know, and I probably didn't do a great job of this as an assistant. I mean, I let the job completely dominate my life, probably. I mean, at the time, I wasn't married. I didn't have kids. So, I mean, it was recruiting all the time, the program all the time. I once had a good friend of mine tell me, after I took about 6 phone calls, we went to grab a bite to eat. He said, hey, man, I just got to be honest with you. You're awful to hang out with. I said, man, well, that hurts. He goes, no, I'm just telling you, like, at some point, you need to put the phone down. And it was a good lesson. He was right. You know, that call can wait 45 minutes potentially, or that text message. So my first year or two, I probably didn't do a great job with that as a head coach. I took any setback really personally, whether I could control it or not. I let it really eat me up. Anytime we lost a game, anytime there was a controversy, you know, I just, you want everything to go perfect. You want to be successful. You want it to go the way that we all envision it in our head. And a lot of it, a lot of it's learning curve. A lot of it's out of your control. A lot of it's, you got to catch breaks. What I've kind of learned the last couple of years is to spend that time to make sure that you're in a good place to be able to do the things that you need to do. So for example, I don't do it every day, but I did it this morning, but I try to get up and spend a little time in the morning. In the morning, phone's down. I'm with my son, with my wife. When she gets ready, I've got baby boys. So I spend 45 minutes to an hour with him in the mornings, reading to him and you know, watching him and try to put the phone away. Then I go for, I'm not going to call it a run, Gordo, but a jog, a light, you know, 2 mile jog or so. I try to listen to a podcast. It kind of gets me thinking about, might be business, it might be culture. It sometimes it's basketball, but just to get me thinking about something besides everything I got to do, come into the office. And then it's all day, you know, basketball, it's whatever, seeing the players, meeting with the players, watching film, whatever it might need to do. And then same thing when I go home, we've started a deal at home where I put my phone in the front of the house when I get home. And from six or so when I get home till eight, when Jack goes to bed, I try not to be on it. Now, I don't always get there, but I try not to be on it. And then when he goes to bed, I do. People, you may have gotten one of these phone calls, but I try to do what I call my mental health walks. So at night, I take the dog for a 2 or 3 mile walk. I get on the phone a little bit. Sometimes it's podcasts and I'm just talking to people. But it's making sure you realize that, yes, the job's important for sure. And if you let it, you can work 24 hours a day. For sure you can. But you got to take some time to be a normal person. You got to take some time to be a human being, or you're going to burn yourself to the point that you won't be good at the things people need you to be good at.
I love it. So true. Okay. So now that we have like a good framework of like who you are, what your responsibilities are, how you manage them. All right. Now you got to give us some insight on something that like the profession needs help with. Okay. You have an assistant job open. It was posted on Hoop Dirt, which I'm sure you're thrilled about. Okay.
I had heard that it posted to Hoop Dirt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was on Hoop Dirt. You probably knew because your phone started ringing off the hook.
Yeah.
So help us out here with this, because this is an important one. Most of the time, as we all know, most of the time when a job gets posted, it's already filled, right? But sometimes you see these things, it comes across the dirt section of Hoop Dirt, so-and-so's leaving or whatever. Like, how should people go about handling that? Do you want them to reach out to you? Do you want them to have people call on their behalf? Is it better just a quick email, a quick text? Like, give us some help here as a head coach dealing with it.
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's probably a little bit of case by case. It's probably a little bit of coach to coach. You're right about what you said. There are a lot of times that people already know what they're going to do, but you know, I've got friends in the last couple of years that, you know, I would say to them, trying to help a friend of mine, you know, another head coach, you know, hey, I'm sure you know what you're going to do, but and sometimes they say, no, I don't. I'm wide open. I have no idea what I'm going to do. So you don't really know, you know, depending on the situation. I think it's hard, as you know, the business is relationships. I think it's hard to get involved with a job if it is truly open without some type of connector. Rarely is there going to be a situation where somebody reaches out that you don't have some connector to that you're going to seriously consider, because this is such a relationship business. That being said, and again, I'm going to go Florida State on you again. I told him I'd probably use a quote from him, so if he's watching, but Coach Jones used to tell me this when I was a video guy at Florida State. You know, he'd say, hey, young fella, you know, you got to make sure people know what you want to do if they're going to help you. You know, I think sometimes guys just assume you're the video guy. Well, everybody knows I want to be a head coach. Well, they might not. They might think you love being the video guy. You know, or there are guys in the business that are director of operations that they love being a director. They don't have an intention of coaching, or maybe they've coached before and they don't want to coach again. So I do think that if you're interested in a job and you have a connector to someone, that you at least need to find out, you know, hey, is that person actually looking for someone, or has that been done behind the scenes for a long time? That's the first thing. is find a connector and figure out, is there actually a job that is open, you know, quote unquote. I know it's on Hoop Dirt, but, you know, do they know who they're going to hire or not? If you can find out through a connector, you know, whether they've already made a decision, the job's truly open, then I think the next part is through that connector, trying to figure out what is that person looking for, you know, because I think a big misconception, and I didn't even really realize this until I put my first staff together. It's not always about how good the assistant coach is. You know, there could be a guy that's a phenomenal assistant that on paper would be the best hire ever. But if that person is going to bump heads with the guys that are currently on that staff for whatever reason, if they're going to repeat the same skill set, then that might not make sense as a hire. And that's something that as I've gone through this, putting my staff together initially and now having one of my guys getting an opportunity to be in a better situation for his family, you know, you got to make sure the pieces fit. And it's not always about who has the best resume or who's got the most experience or do the pieces fit for what you're looking at. So, you know, if you're somebody out there that sees something, posts a Hoop Dirt, find a connector, you know, that you've got a connection with, figure out if the job is actually open, see if you can find out what they're looking for. Are they looking for an experienced guy? Are they looking for a young guy? Are they looking for somebody that can do player development? Are they looking for somebody that has really scouted? You know, you just don't know what a coach is looking for. If you can figure that out, you know, then it becomes, you know, getting to that coach through a connector. And then, you know, if they're interested in pursuing, you know, a potential relationship hire situation with you, they're going to get back to you. They're going to reach out to you. There may be a situation, and I won't say who, but just so people understand, you know, how this can work. I had a situation on a job one time where somebody reached out to me, you know, saying, hey, are you interested in this job? So, yeah, you know, it's a great job. Yeah, I'm interested. You know, and I would tell people that, too. You know, I think you should always, if somebody reaches out to you, should always hear them out because you don't know what opportunity could be out there. So the job pursued me. OK, and I let the person know, yeah, I'm interested. And then I didn't hear from them. And so I was like, you pursued me, man, you know. But that person wanted to know if I really wanted the job or not. So I had to recruit that job for almost a month before I heard from the person. And I ended up having an opportunity to go to that program. But every coach wants something different. You know, he wanted whoever he was going to hire to prove to him that they really wanted to be at that institution. You know, there may be other guys that if you text them every day, they're not going to call you back because you're driving them crazy. So it's a hard balance to try to figure out. But I would say the connectors are really important. Do you know somebody that knows the head coach or somebody on that staff? And that's something else. You know, the head coach, because of what I just said, they're pulled in a million different directions. Another great thing, I think, is if you can find a connector to somebody on the staff, then that person is going to have more time to call you back, more time to talk to you. They're probably also going to have some information on what the head coach is looking for. So before you go right to the head coach, you know, I'm going to somebody on the staff. Hey, is the job actually open? Do you know what coach is looking for? And then ask the staff, you know, is there a realistic opportunity for me to get involved with this job or not?
Yeah,
that would be my best advice to guys that are looking. But I'll always come back to this, too. I'll always say this. I think your best network is the people you work with. And those are the guys that are going to help you get jobs. But, you know, going back to my Coach Jones quote, if you don't at least look into it. And again, you got to make sure that, you know, if you're in your first year as a GA and an associate head coach job post in Division One, you know, that's not a realistic job. But if the job is realistic and you can find out if it's actually open, if you don't pursue it, you're definitely not going to get it. So I think you got to go through those connectors. You got to go through the staff and then you got to try to sell yourself. You know, that was kind of when I pursued jobs and I never openly pursued a job. The job pursued me. But then I realized I needed to pursue jobs. I recruited the job like I would a player. And I tried to make constant contact without being annoying. And I think there's a lot of ways to do that. I think it was at the first conference. I think did I'm trying to think. I'm trying to think if Coach Buzz spoke at the first one.
First one, yep. First one. Okay. It was like 9:30 at night. We were all starving.
Yeah. Okay. So he said something. I may have said this before, so I apologize, but it's always stuck with me. He talked about ways to stay in touch without being annoying. And what he talked about, and I've told a bunch of young guys this, and I'll never forget it. He talked about, you know, whatever it might be. You may not even be trying to get a job. Maybe you're just trying to keep a relationship. So when there is a job, but he would talk about, you know, email after a win, you know, then leave a voicemail. I don't know if people still have office phones. I don't. But, you know, leave a voicemail on their office phone the next week or 2 weeks later, congratulating them on something. So you've reached out in two different mediums, but they haven't had to spend any time on you. You know, then if you've got the coach's number, shoot them a text 2 or 3 weeks later. Now, 2 or 3 weeks later, shoot them a handwritten note. And now you've gotten through almost 2 months of communication, but the head coach has not spent any of his own time on you if he doesn't have that time to spend, but your name constantly keeps coming up, but you're not driving him crazy. And so I think there's creative ways to do that. And I know, I mean, I even do that as a head coach with guys in the business. You know, I try to text them after a win. I'll try to write guys sometimes a handwritten note if I hadn't talked to them in a while, just because I don't like to bother guys either. I mean, even, you know, Coach Hamilton, Coach Enfield, I mean, those two guys I'm very close with, but I always tell them, I don't want to bother you, especially during the season. So I hope that helps, but I think the connectors are important. I think talking to the staff's important. Is the job realistic? Is the job open? And then you got to recruit the job like you'd recruit a player. Show that head coach that you can be valuable to him.
Okay, I want to keep asking questions, but I've had you on here for 45 minutes now. You got a few more minutes for us?
I'm good, man. I'm waiting on a couple of commitments and got some guys coming to see me in a little bit, so I'm good. Fire away.
Well, you said something in there that my ears perked up. You said you got to sell yourself a little bit, and that's something that is really hard for people to do. People feel awkward, uncomfortable talking about themselves. How do you go about selling yourself for a job?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think especially, and I hope this applies more to our members here. They're probably going to tend to be a little younger. I know obviously now, you know, we're starting to get some guys that have been in the business as well. But this is something I think is important for guys that are just getting in to understand. And this is something I had to learn and had to learn, you know, sometimes the hard way. You know, when you're a third assistant, or you're trying to get a third assistant job, or you're trying to get an ops job, or you're trying to get a video job, keep in mind selling things that you can't deliver. So for example, if I'm trying to get a third assistant or ops job, and I'm telling the head coach that I'm going to sign an all-league player, no, you're not. You know, that's not the role that you're in. They don't need you to do that. You know, they've got their top assistant to do that, their next assistant to do that. If it's a support staff role, their third assistant to do that. You're not going to come in setting the world on fire as the top recruiter, top scout. You know, they don't need you to do the important things, if you will. I think when you're getting in, or when you're trying to transition, what value can you bring to the stuff that people don't want to do? And so that to me is the most important. Can you manage guys academically? And by that takes a lot of organization, a lot of time. And I don't know any coaches that love dealing with academics personally. Don't know any of them. Nobody's ever told me. I love academics. But let me tell you something. If a player's ineligible or they're not going to graduate, that's a major problem. So are you organized enough to oversee guys academically? And what does oversee look like? Are you making sure they're in class by class checking, by waking them up if you have to, whatever that looks like? Are you making them show you their grades? Hey, man, where are you at on your grades? Are you making sure they are in study hall? This can be a valuable. Are you communicating with their parents? Because normally when mom and dad are involved, grades tend to be a little better. So don't sell the head coach that I'm going to sign you a. No, you're not. But I can handle academics because this is how organized I am. And I did academics when I was a GA. So that's a big thing. This is just the reality of the business. I'm taking a little. Can you make the head coach money on his camps? Now, guys may not think about that, but that's important. That's important to the assistant coaches. That's important to the head coach. Can you make sure that the coach's individual camp has as many people in it as possible? Can you make sure that his team camps have as many prospects and as many teams as possible. Camp is really hard. It takes a lot of organization and it's not fun. So if you can sell to a head coach that you can help making money at camp and bring good players to campus, you can handle academics. Those are two things, again, that I guarantee you nobody on the staff's volunteering to do that. I'll share a story. I won't say who it was, but I have a friend in the business that actually got a job, which this is unheard of, but he did the work. He started sending a head coach, I think just through email, if I remember right, but getting maybe mailed some of them. He started sending scouts to the head coach on every program in his league and detailed analytics, full scouts. Now, unfortunately, probably for some of the guys on the staff, I think his scouts were better than what they were actually doing. But that was a creative way to, hey, coach, you know, I know I'm not on your staff, but I want to get into college basketball. Here's a full scout on every team in your league. Hope it helps you. There's different ways to, I think, market and sell yourself. But I would just keep in mind, remember where you are in the profession, where you are in the business, and be realistic about what you can provide. Don't go promising things that you're not at that point in your career to be able to provide. And also be smart enough to look at it and go, okay, they've got a, you know, coach who's been in the business 25 years. I've got another one who's been in 15. I have, maybe you have 2 years of experience, you know, whatever it might be. What are the worst jobs in a program? What do people hate to do the most? I'm going to be great at those. Because if you can do that, there's value. There's value in the jobs that nobody wants to do.
So much great information in our conversation here. Okay, before we let you go, you got to let me know, you know, what you're excited about with next year's team. You got a lot of guys coming back, a lot of points coming back, some new faces in the ASUN, right? You get some new teams added with Eastern Kentucky and Jacksonville State. What's it looking like for next season?
Yeah, so we're going into year four here. You know, when we got the job here, we actually lost five starters. Each one of them signed pro contracts, one in the NBA. So it was an interesting adjustment to go from a team with tons of experience and talent to a little bit of hit and restart. I thought for 2 years we kind of built the program back up. We set kind of, and I think you have to be careful when you talk about culture and setting a culture, because you never want to disrespect, you know, any of the success that anybody that was before you had. But everybody's, you know, kind of way of doing things is different. So I think each coach has to establish their way of doing things. So, you know, for the first couple of years, we were recruiting, we were kind of building the program to look like what we wanted it to look like and the way we thought we could be successful. I loved our team this past season. We started 5-2 in the non-conference and beat an ACC team on the road for the first time in program history. We did not know there was a global pandemic coming and unfortunately missed a large percentage of our conference season. I know our guys were really frustrated by that. We felt like when we were healthy, we played great. We were quite frustrated when we were at home and not practicing and not lifting and then coming out of quarantine and trying to play games. So I think for everybody, it was hard for us to get a measure of our team this year, for me, for our players, for the league. So our league, I think, has gotten close to what it was when I came into the league in terms of competitiveness. I mean, Coach McKay's done an unbelievable job at Liberty, and I think Lipscomb will be very good next year with the job Coach Acuff's done. Obviously, you've got Jacksonville State and Eastern Kentucky and Central Arkansas coming in, and the success that Coach Harper and Coach Hamilton's had in the OVC. Coach Pujol and the job he's done at North Alabama. I mean, throughout our league, there are no nights in this league that you can walk into the league and just win a game by rolling. You can't just show up. So I think this can be a really competitive league, but we return a big percentage of our scoring. We return a lot of guys that I think are leaders in that locker room. We've added some transfers that I think can really help us. So to be honest with you, Adam, we're just excited about getting on the court with an experienced group and being able to play basketball. I mean, it was so frustrating to feel like we had built for year three and weren't allowed to get on the court. And so, you know, we're kind of internally looking at this almost as a year three do-over because we didn't get a lot of opportunities to get on the court. But We're excited about the group. We've got a really competitive schedule, so there will be some nights that I'm probably mad at the schedule I've put together. But we're going to make sure that we're prepared for league play and love what we've got coming back.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited to watch you guys next year. I'm always rooting for you, and man, so proud of you and your progression through the industry, and to see you now as a seasoned head coach is really cool. So, but I appreciate you always being so willing to give back to Rising Coaches and our whole entire community and myself personally.
Well, here's what I'll tell you, my man. I say this all the time. It was not long ago that we were sitting in that room and my head was spinning and I had no idea what I was going to do. And in this business, unless you are extremely fortunate, there's going to come a time that all of us need help. And I would say that to anybody listening, even, you know, I've gotten a lot of calls, texts. I am trying to call people back, text people back, even about the job that we have open at the time, because you just don't know when I'm going to be in that situation or, you know, somebody getting into coaching. We're all going to need help at some point. So I think it's important that, you know, you try to establish relationships, you try to treat people the right way. I just appreciate, you know, you guys letting me be a part of Rising Coaches. And I'm so proud of what the organization has done, excited about what you're going to continue to do with it. And I just want to encourage, man, all the guys out there that this is a great profession. It's awesome that you're getting into it. It's also a really hard one. And I think on the hard days, you got to keep your relationships and you got to remember the reasons you got into it. You know, you didn't get into it for money. You didn't get into it to be on TV. You got into it because you love basketball and hopefully you love helping grow and mold young men. So appreciate the opportunity, man. Always a pleasure. And look forward to catching up again soon.
Thanks, Fly.
Yes, sir.